Edith Nesbit, The Ghost Stories. Edith Nesbit is more famously known as a writer of children's stories such as The Railway Children, but in this volume we explore her short stories of the macabre and ghostly sort. Born in 1858 in Kennington, then part of Surrey, her early life was one of constantly moving homes before meeting, age 17, Hubert Bland, who she was to marry 3 years later while 7 months pregnant. Bland kept his affair with another woman going throughout their marriage, and the two children from that union were raised by Edith as her own, together with their own three. After the death of their youngest child at age 15, they founded the Fabian Society in 1884 in his honour. Thought of as the first modern writer for children, she also wrote for adults, producing over 50 books in total, as well as collections of poetry, which we shall explore in a separate volume. These stories are brought to your ears in eerie detail by Gisela Rowe and Richard Midgley.
Man Sighs in Marble by Edith Nesbit. I never in my life knew what it was to have as much money as I required to supply the most ordinary needs, good colours, books and cab fares. And when we were married, we knew quite well that we should only be able to live at all by strict punctuality and attention to business. I used to paint in those days, and Laura used to write, and we felt sure we could keep the pot at least simmering. Living in town was out of the question, so we went to look for a cottage in the country, which should be at once sanitary and picturesque. So rarely do these two qualities meet in one cottage that our search was for some time quite fruitless. We tried advertisements, but most of the desirable rural residences which we did look at proved to be lacking in both essentials. And when a cottage chanced to have drains, it also had stucco as well, and was shaped like a tea caddy. And if we found a vine or rose-covered porch, corruption invariably lurked within. Our minds got so befogged by the eloquence of house agents and the rival disadvantages of the fever traps and outrages to beauty which we had seen and scorned, that I very much doubt whether either of us, on our wedding morning, knew the difference between a house and a haystack. But when we got away from friends and house agents on our honeymoon, our wits grew clear again, and we knew a pretty cottage when at last we saw one. It was at Brenzett, a little village set on a hill over against the southern marshes. We had gone there from the seaside village where we were staying to see the church, and 2 fields from the church we found this cottage. It stood quite by itself, about 2 miles from the village. It was a long, low building, with rooms sticking out in unexpected places. There was a bit of stonework, ivy-covered and moss-grown, just 2 old rooms, all that was left of a big house that had once stood there, and round this stonework the house had grown up. Stripped of its roses and jasmine, it would have been hideous. As it stood, it was charming, and after a brief examination we took it. It was absurdly cheap. The rest of our honeymoon we spent in grubbing about in second-hand shops in the county town, picking up bits of old oak and Chippendale chairs for our furnishing. We wound up with a run-up to town and a visit to Liberty's, and soon the low, oak-beamed, lattice-windowed rooms began to be home. There was a jolly, old-fashioned garden, with grass paths and no end of hollyhocks and sunflowers and big lilies. From the window you could see the marsh pastures, and beyond them the blue, thin line of the sea. We were as happy as the summer was glorious, and settled down into work sooner than we ourselves expected. I was never tired of sketching the view and the wonderful cloud effects from the open lattice, and Laura would sit at the table and write verses about them, in which I mostly played the part of foreground. We got a tall old peasant woman to do for us. Her face and figure were good, though her cooking was of the homeliest, but she understood all about gardening, and told us all the old names of the coppices and cornfields, and the stories of the smugglers and highwaymen, and better still, of the things that walked, and of the sights which met one in lonely glens of a starlight night. She was a great comfort to us, because Laura hated housekeeping as much as I loved folklore, and we soon came to leave all the domestic business to Mrs. Dorman, and to use her legends in little magazine stories which brought in the jingling guinea. We had 3 months of married happiness, and did not have a single quarrel. One October evening, I had been down to smoke a pipe with the doctor, our only neighbour, a pleasant young Irishman. Laura had stayed at home to finish a comic sketch of a village episode for the monthly marplot. I left her laughing over her own jokes and came in to find her a crumpled heap of pale muslin, weeping on the window seat. "Good heavens, my darling, what's the matter?" I cried, taking her in my arms. She leaned her little dark head against my shoulder and went on crying. I had never seen her cry before. We had always been so happy, you see.